Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Coming up, I'm going to let you in on an interview I did with Mark Willimant with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Chase the Ace Lottery. We do it every Friday on 620 CKRM on the Sports Cage, and I had a chance to host when Derek was away, and I talked to Mark Willimant from Northern Saskatchewan, instrumental in bringing the game of football at the grassroots level to many kids up there in Northern Saskatchewan. We'll get to that in a second, but first, the sponsors, Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and David Dubé and the Concord Group of Companies, Mark Greshner Photography. Check out his fine work at markgreshner.com. Boys Next Door Window Cleaning. Check their website out, theboysnextdoor.ca. Riviera Ag Seeds in Radville. Thanks to Paul Riviera and his family for getting on board. Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina, getting the real estate game with a three-time Grey Cup champ. Corey Zadarozniak and Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. And Zelko Stefanovic and the SAS Selects football program out there at the Yar Center in Moose Jaw, where they operate predominantly building the stars of tomorrow. Today, Mark Willimant. How are you today, Mark?
I'm great. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So what do you do in real life? Like, what's your day job?
Well, in real life, I'm a school division superintendent with Northern Lights School Division, and one of our loves is playing football.
Yeah, so I did a little, what we like to call in the business, a little pre-interview, so you and I were chatting before this. So why do you love the game of football? Why does first of all, do you have any kids playing up here? Do you have any kids playing or grandkids?
Not personally. My kids are just out of high school, and they're like me, not the biggest person in the world. But mm-hmm. football is a player, is a game for every person. My kids didn't play. So
where I'm going with this, Mark, is it's a labor of love for you. Like you don't have anybody actively playing. Like when I coached my son and other kids. Like I was a dad, so I became the head coach and the bottle washer and the equipment guy and all that stuff, right? But you're doing this out of the love of the game. Why do you love the game? Why do you want to help kids out so much?
Well, because we've seen since 2013, the sport itself has made a difference in the lives of kids. And across Northern Saskatchewan, we have 8 6-a-side teams and 1 9-a-side team, and have well over 200 kids playing every fall, and there's some kids there that we know through their work in the classrooms, in the schools, in the communities, and from parents that football is a life changer for them.
Yeah, and you have a predominantly Aboriginal community up there, and it's good to keep any, I'm not making this about race, but it's great to keep anybody active. But, you know, up north, you see, you're kind of almost polarized. You're by yourself. It's up north. A lot of people, like, even when you hear about COVID, it's like, well, it's up north. Well, up north is still part of us. Just talk about, you know, you touched on it there. Just talk about how important it is for these kids to get into a sport, and into a sport like football, where they learn so many great values. It's not just about winning and losing. It's about friendships. It's about discipline, teamwork, goal setting, all that type of stuff.
Absolutely. We know how important this game is for all people in Saskatchewan. And we just thought it was right for kids in the north to play. And kids are learning a lot of skills off the field and on the field, giving up and sacrificing and doing what they have to do to be a part of a team. There's a sense of community within those teams and also between all communities in the north. It's a really a great following. It's one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Just talk, because it's not like, the Badgers play the whoever at Libel Field. You guys have to travel distances. Talk about that.
Well, it's unreal. On the east side of the province, for example, a game from Sandy Bay to Cumberland House, one direction, 700 kilometers. And so we have our coaches and volunteers putting their hearts into this. And, you know, there's a lot of late night driving and stuff like that, early morning trips. But, you know, and that costs money. And so we as a school division really support football above and beyond maybe what other jurisdictions would need to do. But again, makes a difference in the lives of kids. So
Yeah, talk about the travel. How do you guys travel? Do you take a big oversized van? How do you drive the kids and get them from game to game?
Well, each school has two or three 15 passenger small buses, so they can deploy those. We have a couple teams that charter buses, do some fundraising, and get out that way. And on the west side of northern Saskatchewan, the communities are only about an hour apart, but the east side communities really have it tough to play a game in Creighton from, let's say, Attakakoop First Nation. That's a jaunt. Mm-hmm. And there are sometimes, if Lalosh in the west side is playing Creighton, they'll meet in Prince Albert if that need be. But we know how important games are to the home fans, so we try to minimize that if we can.
Down here, we're making the sport more popular amongst female athletes. Do you have any female athletes playing there? I've always said there's two ways to grow this game. New Canadians, I love the Aboriginals getting involved because there's a lot of Aboriginal athletes, like the Jordan Tutus, the hockey guys of the world, that wouldn't have an opportunity to play if it weren't for things like kids' sport and people helping them out. So it's great when we can get a lottery like this helping kids afford to play football. But it'd be great to see more Aboriginal kids in the game because they're great athletes. But how about girls? Have you guys incorporated that?
Yeah, we have about three or four girls on each team. And getting a fair bit of playing time as well. I'm an official too, so I kind of know who's on the field. So I'm proud of that. You mentioned new Canadians in LaRonde. We have a community of Filipinos who are learning the game of football, and they're putting their hearts into playing as well. We also have some new Canadians from some Caribbean islands that live in LaRonde as well. And you are correct. The development of the game by new Canadians and females is absolutely positive, and we're a part of it.
Mark, I have a big question to ask you. When do you sleep?
Well, in November, I have to make amends with my wife. Let me put it that way. So after the season's over, it's when we can collect our thoughts and just take a look at what we've done and put our hearts in it, like I said before.
That's awesome, man. I love what you're doing there. That's growing the game of football in Saskatchewan, what we love here and what the Riders love. So lastly, just wrap it up. How important is it for something like this, Chase the Ace, for people to support it and for people like Viterra to get on board and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders to help what you're doing up there?
Oh, it's fantastic. Every dollar that we get from that organization or any other organization goes right into work for kids.
Time now for Ballsy's Pick 6 with our guest celebrity, Jason Claremont. This segment is called Pick 6, JC. Ever throw a pick 6 with the Usher Unicorns?
Get off my back, Ballsy. Come on now. I threw, actually, there's a guy, I hope he listens to your show. His name is Travis Zebark. He played for the Leboldus Golden Suns.
Yeah.
And my grade 11 year, I was a quarterback, and he was playing halfback to the wide side of the field. And I threw him 4 interceptions that game.
Did you?
I threw Z-Bart 4 interceptions that game in the flats.
Wow. Did you try to make a tackle, or did you pull like a Philip Rivers and just kind of like lay down as he runs by you?
Oh, no, he didn't score. Come on now. He didn't score. I went two ways. I played quarterback and middle linebacker.
Yeah, I
turned into middle linebacker mode as soon as I threw those picks.
You are tough. Hey, number one, you were coaching football earlier today. What ages are you coaching?
It's Adam, so it's 10 and 11-year-olds.
Okay. Do you like coaching your kids' team?
I like coaching. Coaching my kid is always a bit of a challenge. I've found that it's tougher to coach your own kid because anytime you make a correction with your kid, they feel like it's personal as opposed to just giving criticism or trying to make a change and those types of things. So those dynamics I hope will change a little bit in the next couple of years. Really enjoy spending the time with my son and his friends. And so I hope that we're able to continue to have that relationship.
If you're like me, the older you get with coaching him or the older he gets, you'll separate maybe yourself from calling plays so that you don't get accused of giving your kid the ball if he's on offense. That's what I found. Just kind of move away from that. Hey, what coach turned you on to football?
Yeah, so actually I was walking through a park at 8 years old behind my house, and there was an RMF team, the Pee Wee Redskins, and they were short players, and they just yelled, "Hey, kid, do you want to play some football?" And that was actually, believe it or not, the coach of that team, one of the coaches of that team was Bob Thomas.
Really?
Who was the equipment manager for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and now he's the equipment manager for the University of Regina Rams.
That is cool. Man, a great CFL career. Local legend starts by walking by a practice. That's outstanding. Hey, JC, what's important to you as far as being a youth football coach? What's the most important job you have?
Well, I think that there's so much bubble wrap in our society now that football is really one of those opportunities where you know, as soon as the whistle's blown and you're competing, there's nowhere to hide. And so it's a great chance to learn discipline, to learn, you know, how the details matter within a group setting and a team setting, how everybody has a role and they're all very important, as well as just, you know, getting some toughness and those types of things.
How is COVID coaching going? Is it different? What kind of challenges does it bring?
Well, we're not playing any games right now. We try to limit the contact with the adults, so the parents aren't anywhere near the kids. We sanitize all the equipment. The kids have to sanitize their hands. They have to do a health check prior to every practice. We do safe contact drills, which we've done for the last couple of years, to limit the amount of contact that occurs during practice. So they're doing more contact against bags and those types of things than actually against other players.
Mm-hmm.
They're obviously, it's football, so you're going to have some contact. But yeah, we've taken you know, a lot of different precautions and not playing any games yet, so not really mixing these kids into other groups. They're very hopeful that they'll be able to do that, but we're going to do some inter-squad scrimmages coming up here so that they can at least have a taste of some football.
Okay, Jason Claremont, number two in Ballsy's pick six. Did we shut down college football too fast in both the U.S. and Canada?
Well, I'm not a medical health expert, so I'm not even going to comment on, you know, those types of things, but I think that they needed to do it due to just revenue models and having kids in locations. Like, if you're going to do online learning, distance learning anyway, you're not just going to bring the athletes in and who they're going to play in front of. Like, it's very gate-driven in some leagues and those types of things. So respect the decision. I think obviously everybody's disappointed, would like things to be different, but I think there's a lot of things we'd like to be different in the world right now, and we just need to control the things we can control and move forward doing the things we can.
You're a TV broadcaster broadcasting Can West games locally here. Give me some names of the people you were looking forward to watch in the Can West. I was looking forward to seeing how Borsa came back, guys like Adam Macker, Donnelly, Bittner, Nias. Give me some of the guys, or maybe you can echo those sentiments, some of those guys I was looking forward to watching.
Yeah, I mean, you just named some good veteran players who, you know, you have some expectations of those guys, but really, I would like to see, and it always kind of surprises everybody every year, of these, you know, first or second year kids who are coming out and making a name for themselves and displacing some third and fourth year guys. And you saw that with, you know, with some receivers a couple of years ago with the Rams, where, you know, you had a great veteran receiver in Davin Johnson, who, you know, he was leapfrogged by a couple other players who ended up having great university careers and showing this stuff, like, you know, a guy like Orion Schienbein is always those types of guys who are able to step up into that mix. And, you know, they're with Morehart and, you know, just all these guys who they can see a veteran player. You know, some of those names that you named might have somebody leapfrog them this year as well. So yeah, it's always neat to see the young up-and-coming guys. And Atlee Simon was that way when he first started. And, you know, just who are the guys who had good high school careers and are going to able to make that leap into the next level.
What was your biggest eye opener going from high school to post secondary ball?
Well, I had a, you know, a good little stepping stone, so I went from high school to junior, and the Regina Rams at that time, they moved their quarterbacks to a backup slot back position to get a better feel for the field, get an understanding of timing, all those types of things. So I was a third string quarterback with the Rams my first year, and bumped into a starting slot back role. And, you know, that was a lot of fun and a bit of an eye-opener as far as the speed of the game.
Yeah. Have you been paying attention to the presentation of the NBA and NHL bubbles? What do you think? What do you think of them, better or worse than you thought?
I think that the intensity in these games is a lot better than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the product is really very polished, and I think that that's a testament to having that time off. Like, typically we will see a lot of these top name players in both sports get kind of exhausted from, you know, taking a heavy workload through the back end of these seasons, and they had an opportunity to get rest. So you see these young talents, and a lot of them are out of the playoffs in hockey now. With Marner and Matthews and McDavid and Crosby, who's not so young anymore, but those guys were able to show up and play at a very high level, and I think that that's just a testament to the hunger for the game and also that rest that they got.
Jason, did you pay much attention to the crowds when you played? I mean, I know you're focused on the game, but I guess where I'm going with this, was your enthusiasm or energy level more intense, say, at Mosaic Stadium as it would be opposed to BMO Field where nobody's watching the game?
Yeah, they were. You do get energized, but you're not. I don't think you typically are able to funnel that energy into anything because the crowd makes noise after a play. Right, they make noise after a big play is made and those types of things. So the play's already done. So you can get a little bit jacked in the celebration. I think it maybe amplifies the celebration a little bit. But as we can see, the level of competition that we've seen in pro sports, even in these bubbles with no fans there, has still been pretty high.
So Lou Williams left the NBA bubble to go to a funeral, but then stopped by a strip joint for chicken wings. That's how the story goes. Is it a bad idea for the NBA to open up the bubble to family and some select friends? It's not like we're sending them to war, Jason. They're playing a kid's game for millions. Am I the only one that thinks this is a bad idea? Do you agree it's a bad idea to open this bubble up?
Well, you're talking left wing, right wing politics here, and I'm not going to get into what I think is right and what's wrong. And I mean, obviously, at any point, leaving a funeral and going for some chicken wings at a peeler joint maybe isn't the best decision that a guy can make. But I think that these guys all have families they'd like to see, and they're going to push to be able to bring them into the bubble and spend some time and have some social interaction with their close friends and families. And if the experts think that is okay, then I'm not going to argue with that.
Okay, well, I'm going to say it. It's a terrible decision. It's going to ruin the season. It's going to be an absolute joke. Like, how can you determine? The stipulations are you have to have been in some sort of long-term relationship with this person, like know them intently. Well, how can they police that? What they're trying to do is stop Tinder and Instagram hookups with these guys, but it's going to be very interesting to see how it goes. Okay, Columbus and Tampa went 5 overtime periods the other day. Should we make overtime in hockey for this year because we're in only 2 centers? Should we make it 4-on-4 so the games end quicker? Because they had to push that Boston-Carolina game to the next day.
Well, I know they did, but, like, who cares? What's the big deal? They're all in a bubble anyway. They're only there to play hockey. They're not going anywhere. It's not like they have to travel. Who cares? Not a big deal. The fans didn't have to get their money back. I mean, I'm okay with it. That was an exciting game. They were exhausted by the end of it. And I think, you're talking about it still, but the 5 overtimes, is that not a record, a playoff record in NHL hockey? Like, pretty exciting stuff. And especially when we have these situations where they're in the bubble and it didn't really affect switching to another game that was already in progress or any of those types of things, I think is fine.
That's a good way to look at it. I'm looking at it the other way. Let's speed it up a little bit here because we got, and the ice in Toronto is not as good as the ice in Edmonton. But people were against it because that's a sports tradition. What's one sports tradition that Jason Claremont maybe would want changed? Like, how about getting rid of the coin flip in football?
No, I mean, that's your suggestion. I don't know that we'd get rid of that. I think that a lot of times we're going to see the handshakes are going to stop, and I don't mind that. We have youth sports now where we'll go out and play a baseball game, and at the end of the game, it's a tip of the hat for these young kids and the coaches, and they tip their hat and kind of nod in in agreement and in respect, I could see that just carrying on.
Hey, what's the most exhausted Jason Claremont's ever been after a game, in recognition of 5 overtime periods and 3 regulation periods?
There was a game we played, actually, in junior football, 1997, I think, in Kelowna, and it went into double overtime, and it was a very warm day. It was a very tough game. It was probably the most exhausted I've been after a football game.
Now, let's move to the CFL in number 5 in Ballsy's pick 6. Should we pull the plug on this season already?
I think the plug's already been pulled. I mean, we're talking about the plug being pulled in college football and those types of things, or university sports here in Canada, and that's a gate-driven sort of league. And even more, it's just a fundraise-driven league, and you take on fees as far as student student athletes are concerned for their rec fees and those types of things. So that revenue's dried up for university. The revenue's kind of dried up for the Canadian Football League. And I, you know, kind of empathize with the players. They're all, they're probably all working jobs now because they've been, you know, trying to earn revenue that they thought they were going to be earning since May or June. Those months have long since passed, and to displace them and bring them up here for, you know, 4 to 6 games is probably not the smartest thing for those guys to do for their families. They want to try to keep the league alive. I get that. But we're kind of running into some cold weather coming up here.
Yeah. Would you play in cold weather for 33% of your salary back when you played?
Back when I played, you know, honestly, we used to talk about you play for the love of the game. So I used to joke that I'd play for free, and I think a lot of these guys are still of that mindset. And you know, you're talking about, you know, mid-20s guys in their mid-20s, and that's probably the mindset they have. They want to go. They want to get back to playing football. They want to put some film together so that they can possibly make a run to the NFL. All those types of things. But as you get guys who are a little bit older in their careers, maybe they don't want to come back and risk injury, you know, for 4 to 6 games and 33% of their salary, and you know, the exchange and all those types of things that the American players have to deal with.
One of the great Canadians that ever played in this league is Jason Clairmont. Are you concerned about the future of football in this country, both at the CFL and amateur level?
I'm not. No, I think that football is a sport that it builds men and it creates character and leadership, and we're seeing a resurgence of football at the grassroots level, especially with the resurgence of the Flag Football League here, run by Mike Thomas. And so football in some form or fashion will survive, and it might not be things they talk about the new normal. There might be a new normal for football, and we'll just have to wait and see what that plays out to be.
12 years ago on this day in 2008, Michael Phelps became the winningest Olympic athlete of all time when he took home his 10th and 11th gold medals at the Beijing Olympics. Hard to believe it was 12 years ago. He went 8 for 8 and broke almost every swimming-related medal record in the book. By the time he retired, he earned 23 gold medals. That was must-see TV for me back then at the Olympics. I'm not a big swimming guy, but I had to tune in to see what he was going to do. Who is Jason Clairmont's appointment-tuning athlete right now? Who do you got to watch?
Appointment-tuning?
Yeah, like somebody you got to watch. Meaning if he's on TV, you got to stop and watch. Like for me right now, it's Connor McDavid. When Connor McDavid plays, I love watching him play. Every time he's on the ice, what's he going to do? Who's that for you?
Yeah, I like to see. I love seeing Connor McDavid live. It just is that much better. He just seems like a video game cheat code. There's some athletes right now that I really enjoy watching. Bryson DeChambeau right now is just dominating golf with some of the changes he's made. That's, you know, you got to tune in and see what he's doing and just see how long that ball is that he's hitting off the tee. That's obviously one. I like to see, you know, a bunch of different athletes. Odell Beckham Jr. was one that I really liked watching. Saquon Barkley is another one. I like to watch to see Tom Brady, to see, you know, has his games dropped at all? You know, I was a huge Peyton Manning fan and, you know, unfortunately saw his talents hit the wall prior to his last year, and just, wanting to see, does Tom Brady actually have the fountain of youth?
Yeah, okay, so a couple more quick. We call these a two-point conversion, two extra stories. You touched on it, so I'm just going to add it. Tom Brady, that's intriguing. How will Tom Brady do in Tampa? And if they continue with an NFL season, and how will Cam Newton and Bill Belichick work out? Are you intrigued by those two stories?
Yeah, not so much by Belichick and Cam Newton, because that's 100% going to be on Cam Newton now. Like Belichick, he doesn't care who you are.
Yeah.
He doesn't care what you've done. He just brings in guys, and he would prefer that you just take your name off the back of your jersey, and he's just going to, you know, pick guys by numbers, who's performing the best, who can fit in the best situation, who fits their culture. How can he use them? Those types of things. So if you're an athlete and you perform for Bill Belichick, you're going to see the field.
Yeah.
So that's 100% on Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Tom Brady has a great situation because he's now got that familiarity with Gronk there. And I think that'll just, you know, that'll be his security blanket. I bet that he gets, you know, probably 30% of the looks that they do when they're in second and third and short situations where they're going to pass, you know, 4 to 6 yards. I think that'll be... you know, you'll see Gronk get probably 30% of those looks. That'll be his security blanket, and that'll be, you know, very comfortable for Tom. And I'm just, again, I'm more wanting to see what's his long ball doing. How's he able to get back up after hits and those types of things? He's done a lot of things to change his game and change his diet and change the way he lives his life to, to be able to play football as long as he can. And just interesting to see some of these athletes like Tony Gonzalez, who also did the same thing, see how they can prolong their careers.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. It would be interesting to a guy like you who played into his 30s. Okay, lastly, what's the best jersey you've ever worn when you played? What was your favorite jersey that you've worn? Was it the Usher Unicorn one? Was it the RMF one? Was it a certain BC Lion color scheme? Was it the Rider one, the throwbacks? What was it?
Those Rider throwbacks were pretty cool. We wore them in 09 in a game, I think, against Montreal. Those were pretty sweet. But we just had these jerseys in BC. They were black on black on black, and they were just sweet.
Yeah, I like those too. I absolutely do. That leads me to my last one, because I brought that up. What do you think of the Jays' new unis, those baby blue ones? I like them.
Yeah, the Jays, they're sweet. And you know what? We actually have a pretty neat connection to the Blue Jays and the way that they changed their marketing and their logos right here in Saskatchewan with Anthony Partapilo. He's the marketing director of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and he was instrumental in helping the Jays redesign what they were doing out there in Toronto, and now he's here with our Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Yeah, I really love the jerseys, the baby blue. I like the black socks with the blue striping. Hey, Jason, thanks for this. I really appreciate it, my friend.
Yeah, good luck to your kid down south here this year.
Yeah, well, he's like everybody else, mothballed till the spring, but it'll be interesting to see how he does. Thanks for that, Jason.
Okay, take care.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Rough Riders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.